before we go into question and answers, based on the audience questions, we're going to move into the panel discussion. So to kick that off, my first question that I have is for both Keith and Kelly. And thinking about the topic of mentorship and working with other communities to promote replication of the work that the HEAL program and Efficiency Vermont are doing, can you provide some advice on how to be an effective mentor when sharing this information with other agencies and organizations that are interested in replicating your program?
Sure, I'll jump in and go first and give Kelly a breather for a second. You know, we're big fans of the ESE and what they've done in Vermont. And, you know, down here in our neck of the woods, we're not quite as mature from an energy efficiency standpoint. So we think it's really important to reach out to others like ourselves, other states or other municipalities, and really have an open dialogue about, you know, how do we figure this out for, you know, our regional areas or you know, responses, and to be very upfront and honest that, you know, we have some pieces of the puzzle that we think are pretty compelling, but there's a lot that we don't have figured out, and being open and willing to, as we say, have people tell us that our baby's ugly, we're okay with that. That's how we learn, and that's the kind of the feedback that we want to have and give.
Yeah, I think Keith made a great point. It's really being open to engagement and being willing to accept that criticism as a real opportunity for improvement and just refining your efforts even further. And, you know, and the other piece I would emphasize, which I referenced in my presentation, is it's really it's not a one-size-all solution, and there's just no substitute for doing that homework from the start. You know, in terms of the efforts that we're making, we know they're long-term, and if we don't do that work in the beginning, you know, we could be wasting our time and energy on channels that we thought might be great, but that aren't actually going to have the impact we were looking for. So that would just be the key takeaway point for me.
Thank you for those insights. My next question is for, again, Kelly, Karina, and Elizabeth and Eileen. And, of course, Keith, if you have thoughts, you can jump in too. But how can folks incorporate storytelling in the tools that they use to promote the success of their programs? And what makes storytelling a particularly effective means of communication? We've touched on this a little bit, but any specific thoughts you have would be appreciated.
Well, this is Eileen and Elizabeth. I guess that I would say that we think that storytelling is crucial to the work we do, particularly given the technical nature of a fair amount of it. And so the storytelling is the way that we get people's attention. And also, I think people learn with stories. And we at Climate Solutions have a project called Solution Stories, which is 2-minute videos. We tend to think that using the moving image and as many images as possible and kind of crisp, almost journalistic style so that it's accessible is very important. And we also use the case study approach, and as I mentioned in the report when we did the presentation, and we found that is very important because you're able to tie together a lot of information, hopefully in not a dry manner. But then you can reuse that information in lots of different ways, and we repurpose all of the information in lots of ways. So I think telling stories is crucial in the way that we deal with highly technical, at times highly technical, material that can be dry and complicated. We're constantly looking for ways to demystify clean energy and climate solutions.
So this is Kelly, and I think that was a really great point. how can we make this approachable and accessible and get help these stories really resonate with people? And I think highlighting that journalistic perspective as well is really important. I mean, the key is that we want our stories to show and demonstrate value rather than just telling people that we have value. And it means putting in that extra effort up front to think about the channels and the presentations and the information that you're sharing, that it really is compelling and interesting for people. It's something that they want to engage with. And we've found that really highlighting through case studies and stories the perspectives of folks who've worked with us, and you know, framing up questions that are you know, designed to really get feedback has been a much more effective way of drawing in folks than just you know, telling them at a high level what we've achieved.
This is Karina, and I just want to say that the points that Eileen, Elizabeth, and Kelly all made are very good. And I also just want to stress the fact that really storytelling is, I think, one of the best effective means of communication with your program and communicating your success. We tell our project participants that they should never underestimate their power to influence. And it's really beautiful when you hear it from people that are other people that are not entrenched in this daily work and think it really resonates more with everyone and funders, donors, your community, your local leaders. It's a much more effective way of communicating your success, we believe.
Great. Thank you for those insights. My last question for our panel speakers today, in particular, I think Eileen and Elizabeth may have something to add on this, is what are some low-cost yet effective methods that state and local governments can use to share their program successes with others that may be interested in replicating their work, given that, you know, many programs are operating in a resource-constrained environment?
Okay, so I think that one of the lessons that we've learned over the last 4 years, and for those of you who saw all of the logos that I displayed earlier when I was showing you all the places we've been scattered all around the Northwest. And in the last 2 years, one of the most effective methods of galvanizing and organizing state and local governments we've found is geographically clustering our work. And so By creating these clusters, these geographic clusters centered around Seattle and around Portland, but aligned upward with all state and regional policies, and then locally to have the communities that are next to each other or close enough that they're actually already collaborating, either because they have to due to transportation needs or other regional matters, they're already sitting at a lot of different tables having conversations about how they can best serve their citizens and residents. And it's turned out that since those tables are already set, we just needed to make sure we brought our appetizers and entrees at times. And that's been one of the most important sort of epiphanies we've had recently. I don't know if there's anything, just that aggregation of demand is another piece. By having 9 cities in and around King County all saying to the same utility that's serving them, or 1-2 utilities, we are all moving in the same direction, rowing in the same boat, we need your help. That is much more powerful than having one city of 20,000 or 30,000 saying to the utility, we want you to invest more in renewable energy or whatever the request is. They're also able to share resources. There's great opportunity and expertise among all of these cities that we're working with have a lot of skill that they are developing, but they develop them in silos. And one of the things we're trying really hard to do is break down those silos, because the city's budgets are so constrained in what they can do, and smaller cities in particular may not even have a sustainability director, much less a climate planner. So there's a lot of, scalability that we try very hard for scalability and replicability here, and that's one of the ways that we've been working on that, by having the cities that are right next to each other share.
And this is Elizabeth, and I would also add that the state and county governments also play a really valuable low-cost convening role. That's what we've certainly seen with the King County Cities Climate Collaboration, that they don't have to expend a lot of energy to provide resources and share best practices among their cities. Simply convening that table is goes a long way.
Great, thank you. I think now we'll start taking some questions from the audience. So before we launch into that, I just want to mention to folks on the line that our communications framework is up on the screen, and I know people are probably going to start dropping off the line as we near 2:30. And as you leave the webcast today, there's an option to provide some feedback through some questions that will pop up on your screen, the first of which will focus on your reactions to this framework. So just a reminder to folks to, you know, take advantage of the opportunity to provide us with feedback as you leave today. And with that, I think, Lauren, we can go ahead and jump into the question and audience for the question and answer session. And we'll start off doing one question for each speaker, and if we have time, we'll go into more.
Okay, great. Thanks, Emma. I'm going to start in the order of the presentation. So, Karina, the first question that we received for you, the participant just wants to thank you for an excellent presentation and was wondering, based on your experience, if there were other environmental issues that have been addressed by the PPC method that you presented on.
That's a great question. I cannot speak directly to any environmental issues that have been have used this strategy. But I can tell you that with climate change being such a umbrella topic that covers really food and water and national security issues, that really I would say that it can be applied to any other environmental issue. And that when you want to engage people, PPC, I think, is the most effective. As long as you promote, provoke, and celebrate people, they're always willing to come to the table, and they're happy to be a part of a bigger issue and a bigger organization, and using that is what we found has been really effective in growing our program, and think that that method can apply to any environmental issue.
Great. Thank you, Karina. The next question for Eileen and Liz. Have you equated the GHG reductions that you presented on, have you equated these to cost savings?
We have not. Although we have noted that there are excellent examples around the country of communities such as Burlington, Vermont, who have looked at costs associated with different greenhouse gas reduction strategies. In Burlington, I believe a consulting group named Spring Hill Solutions actually adapted some analysis that McKinsey Group had done and applied that to a community process where they were entertaining different greenhouse gas reduction strategies, but we have not specifically.
Well, we haven't in Beaverton and Issaquah with this with the energy map and carbon wedge analyses that we've done yet, because in terms of where they are in their process, they're still picking their strategies and their pilot programs. Previously, earlier, before Elizabeth actually had joined the team, we did do that work for sure in Jackson, Wyoming, in Edmonds, and in a couple of other places, Albany, Oregon, but in specific projects only. So a specific energy efficiency project, a specific community solar project, a specific waste-to-energy project in Edmonds. So in those cases, we looked a lot at the costs and the benefits and the GHG reduction and all of that on a project-by-project basis. But in 2014, that is most definitely where we will head, because our aim in 2014 is to see the sustainable energy strategies implemented. And you have to figure out the cost to make that happen, and obviously the funding, as well as the partnerships with the utilities and the governments and the business community and the citizenry.
Great. Thank you for that response. And then the next question for Keith. Has the HEAL concept been piloted at the federal level, so at a bigger scale, such as partnering with a credit union?
In terms of federal government level, no, but that would be an intriguing possibility, wouldn't it? On a national level, in terms of rollout in multiple jurisdictions, we have had some interest from employers, but interestingly, not from credit unions. So if you have a credit union that does have a national footprint, or some federal agency that would like to try the HEAL program, we would love to talk to both of them.
All right, thanks, Keith. And then lastly, for Kelly, we have a question. This participant saw your graph of your blog, and they were curious what happened during March 2013 on the blog that resulted in a spike of interest.
Yeah, you know, I think we actually kind of got our feet under us and really started doing more promotions through our social media, and we were able to leverage a couple of earned media placements to bring people to the blog in March. And then, you know, it's just a funny thing when we work on energy efficiency, the times that people tend to be interested in the year, and I think we actually had some cold weather. So there were more people coming to our site overall and, you know, clicking on the blog because it was just on the homepage.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for your responses to those questions. We did receive several more questions from the audience, which, unfortunately, we're not going to have time to get to on the call today. What we'll do is we'll make sure that all the speakers get those questions and can provide responses in writing. So we will post responses to our website along with the audio and the copies of the presentations in the coming weeks. So thank you, everyone, for staying with us through the webcast and participating in this series. We greatly appreciate the time and expertise of all our speakers and the participation of everyone on the line. If any additional questions come up about EPA's programs, the State and Local Climate and Energy Program, feel free to contact me, and I can also get you in touch with the speakers if you have additional questions that come up about the presentations you saw today later on. So thanks again, and be on the outlook for updates for our email newsletter of upcoming topics that we will be covering in the new year. So with that, thank you, and we'll go ahead and end today's call.